From Springfield, this is State Week in Review, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
There is no Cayman Investments or vehicles in the Caymans or anywhere else outside the S just for me. I have never set up an investment vehicle or a bank account or any other structure for myself outside the U.S. What my firm did is what many, many financial firms do, and I think the majority of venture capital firms and private equity firms do, and that is when they invest in a foreign company, a non-U.S. company, they'll set up an investment vehicle, often in the Caymans, so that their limited partners are treated for tax purposes the same way as if it were a U.S. company. There's nothing sinister or strange about it. It's widespread common practice.
For those who want to stash their money, and that includes corporations, in overseas accounts, whether they're in the Cayman Islands or some other foreign country, these billionaires and these runaway corporations, they're not patriotic, in my opinion.
We heard there Governor Pat Quinn, and before that, Bruce Rauner reports this week detailed that the private equity firm with which Rauner was involved have holdings in the Cayman Islands, known for their favorable tax climate. Quinn has tried to use that connection as portraying Rauner as not patriotic. We'll talk about that on this week's edition of State Week. I'm Bill Wheelhouse. Our panel today includes Charlie Wheeler, director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield, Brian Mackey, reporter with WUIS and Illinois Public Radio. Joining us from our State House Bureau, Amanda Venicky, State House Bureau Chief for WUIS and IPR, and our guest this week, Dave McKinney of the Chicago Sun-Times. Dave, good to have you on the show.
Thanks, Bill.
And it was reporting from your organization, Dave, about Mr. Rauner's private equity company did have some tax holdings in the Cayman Islands. So we'll start with you to bring us up to speed with this particular story.
Well, I mean, this all started, basically in looking at the statement of economic interest that Rauner filed. And, you know, among the pages and pages of investments that he declared, there were five of them that were domiciled in the Cayman Islands. And it's basically what it involves is matching up the names on those economic interest statements with a registry that the Cayman Islands maintains online. And we found that three of the funds that were registered there trace back to GTCR, the private equity company that Rauner chaired until October of 2012. There was a batch of stock holdings that he had that were declared on his economic interest statement and tied to his foundation. And then there was another fund that he, on his economic interest statement, declared a capital gain from. So presumably there was a sale of stock or something with that. And so anyway, this issue really was ready-made for Quinn. It feeds into the narrative that, you know, we have this uber-rich guy who is using these exotic investment strategies that, you know, politically have been a problem for really members of both parties. I mean, you know, this was an issue in the presidential campaign. Mitt Romney, of course, had Cayman Island investments that, Obama seized on. And then we've seen on the flip side several of Obama's appointments, including a cabinet appointee, the Treasury Secretary, struggling with the same issue because in their portfolios they had funds that were also domiciled in the that were domiciled in the Cayman Islands. So politically for Rauner, it's been very, you know, difficult for him to explain, given that he's the man who has been on the campaign trail with the $18 watch and the Carhartt jackets and the Wrangler jeans. This is not an investment opportunity that's open to most people in Illinois, and that's really kind of what he's been left to explain.
Now, Governor Quinn, he didn't directly say, Bruce Rauner, you're unpatriotic. He kind of felt that the whole process of doing this type of investment is not patriotic in his mind. But the message I'm sure he was trying to get across was trying to put that nod of patriotism into this campaign. Is that something you think Quinn will be able to milk and manufacture and stretch on Bruce Rauner in this campaign?
Well, I think we'll see it popping up in commercials. I mean, they released an online video that I thought was
two. Think actually by now. Yeah.
But there was one in particular that was pretty well done, and I would imagine this will be part of the advertising strategy. And of course, the Cayman Islands, what we can say about it is that they don't have an income tax there. That it's basically a tax haven. So there are companies that exist there that. Really they exist only on paper. And I think Obama's line at one point was that, there's a place in the Cayman Islands called the Ugland House that has, tens of thousands of corporations using that address and basically doing so to minimize or eliminate any sort of tax liabilities that they would have in the U.S. And, nothing here is suggesting that Rauner did anything wrong or illegal, but it also has shed light on the fact that Rauner continues to refuse to disclose all of the attachments to his income taxes, and that's been another point that Quinn keeps trying to hammer home. And there may or may not be anything in his income tax attachments that gets into this, but again, it's just right in Quinn's wheelhouse here that this issue has sprung up.
And Amanda Venicky, you got to put this issue to Bruce Rauner at the Illinois State Fairgrounds.
So Bruce Rauner continues to use the line that whenever the governor throws something at him, that it's meant as a distraction from the issues that are going on with Quinn's own campaign, be it the federal investigation into hiring at the Department of Transportation or what Rauner says are Quinn's failed policies. And where Rauner clearly made his money that he has used mostly to propel his campaign for governor. We wouldn't even know the name Bruce Rauner if he weren't a multimillionaire who has been willing to infuse millions of those dollars into his attempt to be Illinois' next governor. If he hadn't been a private equity investor and a very successful one. And there are, tax experts who say, this is how it goes. That's basically the line that Rauner is trying to give, that this is not an uncommon practice and that it wasn't his personal bank account. It's not as if he had a tax accountant who was looking to find him ways so that he wouldn't have to, pay out of his personal checkbook. This is all companies, finances, and that is a deeper issue. It's, he says, what corporations do. And that's where it is confusing. As Dave said, we don't have the actual any additional information. Rauner has released some tax information, kind of like the first couple of pages, but you don't have the supporting documents to be able to match anything up. And he says in October we'll get also his latest round. That's something Quinn continues to hammer Rauner on as well, not just the supporting documents, but where's his stuff? Something that Quinn's, when he was running mate to Rod Blagojevich, and Rod Blagojevich had asked for a delay in filing his taxes until just before the election, was just fine with Quinn. So I think you have here, it's a very, it's intricate. It is heavy financial stuff. I mean, Bruce Rauner made his fortune doing this sort of work because he was able, and your average Joe not only are they unable to invest in the Cayman Islands because they don't have the money, but this is also some pretty high-level, lofty financial maneuvering and, according to him, what successful private equity firms do to make their money.
Well, and we know that we have seen Rauner's income vary a lot from year to year, right? So I'm looking back at the summaries of his tax returns that he released last year. He made $53 million in 2012, but only $28 million in 2011. And there have been people talking about how he didn't pay, I believe it was, what, Medicare tax?
In Social Security.
Social Security in one of those previous years. And this is because if you're that wealthy, you have farm income and all these different types of investments that you can help ameliorate your tax, the amount of taxes that you owe. This is, like you said, it's not uncommon for people in that tax bracket.
Dave,
Lynn Rauner says in this case, in terms of these Cayman investments, that it did not affect his tax rate. That's something that he also continues to say. I pay the same tax rate as Pat Quinn. That's a whole other discussion, I think, in terms of if people think that he should be paying this same tax rate as Illinois' governor, who makes, in the over $100,000, not anywhere near $53 million. But nonetheless, he says that these Cayman investments did not change his tax burden.
I mean, I think what's interesting politically for Quinn, though, is, you know, he's pretty much gone through the entire summer and even into the spring, you know, just getting hammered. And, you know, he's had this problem, as Amanda mentioned, with hiring over at IDOT. He's had, you know, I think probably a more significant problem with the Neighborhood Recovery Initiative. I mean, that is under federal investigation. And so I think in this issue, he sees something that might be giving him a little bit of traction. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see over the coming weeks if voters latch onto it or not. I mean, I think, you know, as hard as it is for all of us to understand what, you know, the nature of these investments, how they affected Rauner's taxes or didn't affect them, you know, I think it's going to be very hard for an average voter to get their arms around, you know. But you know.
But it's still easy to make a commercial out of. You go to a tropical paradise, yep, and done.
Right.
I joked that the Quinn campaign probably had rounds of Malibu shots or something when this news story broke, because it is something that they can sell. Then again, they've been trying to portray Rauner as this out-of-touch multimillionaire throughout the entire course of the campaign, and I'm not sure that that has been all that successful or that people care when they're frustrated about where the state of Illinois is. I know I've talked to people that say, yeah, whatever, get a businessman in there that is able to get Illinois on the right course financially, whatever that takes.
I mean, the ad that the Quinn people threw out, I thought, you know, as Amanda mentioned, with the swaying palm trees and the beaches and you know, kind of the place that we all want to go, I thought it was effective as well, because, you know, in that segment was a soundbite from Senator Chuck Grassley from Iowa. He's the senior senator over there, a Republican, and the chairman of the Senate Finance Committee. And he's really kind of made it a career of going after, or of late anyway, of going after appointees of Barack Obama on this very issue. And so in that soundbite, you know, they have Grassley saying, you know, the only point in investing in the Cayman Islands is to avoid paying your taxes. And, you know, that feeds right into Quinn's narrative. Of course, the Rauner people say, well, you know, that's not at all true. So anyway, Quinn's people are trying to make a lot of hay with this, and it'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
There's certainly, though, no allegations of anything illegal. These are things that are within the rules. Would that be correct?
Yeah,
it is correct.
The U.S. tax code is written in such a way, it's over the years, it's become an unwieldy conglomeration of arcane provisions, almost all of them put in there to benefit one special interest or another. Joe Sixpack doesn't have the resources, doesn't have the lobbyists, doesn't make the campaign contributions to get the tax code favorable to him, but the super rich do. And so you have all these provisions so that legally they can stash money overseas, they can go through a whole lot of machinations, and they employ teams of auditors and accountants and tax experts to figure out every little nook and cranny of the tax code where they can avoid paying taxes. And Rauner is right. Corporations do it. I mean, that's what a corporation is all about. It's maximizing return for its shareholders. It's squeezing every penny out of the operation so that its stock value increases. And that's basically the fiduciary duty of the directors of a corporation. That's what they're supposed to do. Now, whether you like it or not, that's just the way it is. And as I say, everything that Rauner has done and his companies have done with respect to taxes, at least what we've heard so far, is fair game under the tax code. But that leads on to another discussion. Should we reform the tax code? There's been talk about doing away, both on the national level and here in Illinois, doing away with some of these offshore tax haven advantages that cost the federal government billions and they cost Illinois billions in taxes every year. It's not gotten a whole lot of traction yet, but it's an issue.
I thought Rauner had a fairly effective pushback on this, Charlie, because one of the things, you know, in the day or two after this broke that he pointed out was that the state teachers retirement system and the Illinois State Board of Investment, the two systems that you know, invest, you know, pretty much all of the government pension funds in Illinois related to the state, they have investments tied up in funds that are based not only in the Cayman Islands, but Bermuda and you know, a lot of other offshore holdings like that. And I think Rauner's point is, hey, if it's okay for them, why is it not okay for me?
I think the big difference is the teachers' retirement system doesn't stash money in the Cayman Islands to avoid paying taxes. the teachers' retirement system, state employees' retirement system, public pension systems don't pay taxes. So it's totally apples and oranges in my judgment.
I mean, I think it's, you know, from their perspective, they would say, though, that the you know, the state legislature took action several years ago to ban pension investments in Iran and in the Sudan. And if this is such a terrible issue, why wasn't Pat Quinn out there leading the charge to ban investments like this in those tax havens? I mean, clearly, Charlie, you're right. I mean, they have those pension systems have a fiduciary duty to, you know, get as much earnings out of wherever, you know, wherever they invest for
and some would say that's what corporations are charged with as well. I mean, that's by definition.
Right. But I do think that this is a ready-made issue for Quinn. Mm-hmm. It feeds into the rich guy narrative that he's trying to hammer home. He is desperately looking for anything that will give his campaign traction right now. And I think this is an issue that has good potential to do that.
Speaking of wealth, an issue that came up in another campaign, the U.S. Senate race, Dick Durbin and Jim Oberweis, Walgreen decided not to do an inversion, and it remains an Illinois-based company. And Jim Oberweis this week accused Senator Dick Durbin of bullying Walgreen into that position. Your perspective on that, Dave McKinney?
Well, I mean, it does sort of dovetail into the whole thing we've been talking about with Rauner, that, you know, going to a lower taxed country and you know, trying to minimize or avoid U.S. tax obligations. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I sort of think that on this issue, Oberweis is a little out of step. I mean, I think, you know, most people in Illinois are happy that the company's feet was held to the fire and they, you know, they're staying put. I mean, that I don't think anybody who, you know, looks at this thinks that it's a good thing for the state of Illinois to have a major employer pick up and move out of here. And
even, know, if it's not actually the infrastructure, if
yeah, just the only by picking nature, up and moving would be the mail drop for their
exactly
taxes.
The PO box,
absolutely.
Basically.
And so, you know, and there's not, you know, we're not, it's not as if we're talking about these massive government incentives that were, you know, that were shot down and very controversial with ADM and these other companies that try to cash in on them. I mean, it would have been a pretty significant psychological blow, I think, to the state and to the Quinn administration to lose a company like Walgreens on paper, or, you know, even if it isn't just on paper. And so for Oberweis to stand there and criticize Durbin for bullying them, I mean, I don't think
Walgreens could have been politically bullied. They are a giant company that was making that decision, they've said, for all sorts of reasons, including that they were fearful of perhaps some of the scrutiny their taxes would come under and what have you. And also, could these rules perhaps be changed? Would this be something that they'd have to turn around and switch up, because this is a growing issue, the issue of inversions. And I think it gets to a broader issue that Congress is going to have to figure out, as well as the state of Illinois, in terms of how do you deal with companies in an increasingly globalized world where corporations are able to, you know, pick up in some way, shape, or form and move, and that is all changing. Is the United States tax code competitive? Did there need to be changes? And at the same time, obviously, as the government is looking for money to support the services that it provides, needing to have a tax code that holds companies paying into the state and federal government coffers.
You know, I just don't know who Oberweis, though, was really trying to talk to and with the criticism, because, I mean, the reality is, in Illinois, most big corporations don't wind up with a very hefty corporate income tax bill to begin with. And sure, there are property taxes that get generated from their complex in Deerfield, but you know, this is an issue that it's a win for the state to keep them here. And I don't understand the logic behind going after Durbin on this.
When you're, I guess, down in a campaign, which most likely Oberweis is, one would probably have to take about any shot they could. But your point is well taken. You're listening to State Week. Just ahead, we'll talk about an Illinois lawmaker who gets to plead guilty in order to keep himself in the Illinois legislature.
Support for State Week in Review comes from Illinois Issues, a public affairs magazine deciphering Springfield legislation and the state of the state. This month's environmental issue looks at the state's endangered species list, also climate change, and a parks update. Illinois Issues and its companion publication, The Roster of State and Government Officials, is available at illinoisissues.uis.edu.
Our panel on State Week, Charlie Wheeler, Brian Mackey, Amanda Venicky, and the Chicago Sun-Times' Dave McKinney. I'm Bill Wheelhouse. Staying with the gubernatorial campaign for a minute, the Quinn administration, though, has had some trouble gaining traction on issues, but they seem to get mired under their own wheels sometimes in the mud, and the IDOT hiring issue still haunted them a little bit this week.
Yeah, we can. The AP had an interesting story. So the Quinn administration was sued by a good government campaigner back in, I believe it was April, over political hiring at IDOT. And at that time, they said, "Oh, we've already reviewed and reclassified these jobs." So the Associated Press files this Freedom of Information Act request, and it gets denied, saying that these, it has made no final – the administration says we've made no final decisions. And that does seem to contradict with what their public message had been that, oh, yes, we took care of this problem. It's all been resolved. And this is something that has been ongoing. We've had the transportation secretary was sort of – I guess she resigned, but it did not appear to be like she was happily leaving that job. We had, because there are these allegations of political hiring, her own stepdaughter had gotten a promotion where she claimed that the papers were just – she found them on her desk one day. She didn't really ask for this promotion. It just kind of magically happened. So there are still a lot of questions out there about this, and it certainly doesn't look good that the administration is saying one thing to the public and perhaps in court and saying something else when people are trying to get more information out of them.
Well, yeah, they flat out lied when the first story came out. They said, yeah, we've reclassified them and this is a done deal. And all of a sudden, they either lied then or they're lying now when they're saying it's still in process. And
well,
the thing that
I found, put a very fine point on it, Charlie.
Well, you got to call them as you see them.
Yeah, you're right, Charlie.
Charlie's right, yeah.
No, I mean, sometimes you get these weaseling bureaucrats and these spokespeople who are adept at doublespeak. Sometimes you got to call them on it. It either is or it isn't. This is an issue. Either they did classify him back then or they didn't. It's not, well, we kind of half-classified him. And the thing that I found surprising was the AP also asked for the rules under which jobs have been classified as either being subject to patronage hiring or not subject to patronage hiring. And apparently these rules aren't available or they're still being developed or whatever. That struck me as passing strange because if memory serves correctly, the obligation to stop patronaging hiring goes back to a Supreme Court decision in the late 1980s, the Rutan decision. Maybe it came out in 1990. So we've had more than two decades to figure out how we're going to classify these jobs. And apparently the folks at Central Management Services, which oversees state hiring, just can't find the paperwork.
Apparently they have taken up a state office in the Cayman Islands where they store, store their rules as well. So it's all located there. We had an Illinois lawmaker issue a guilty plea this week on some criminal charges, but the charges were whittled down, and he pleads guilty to a charge, but looks like he'll be able to remain an Illinois lawmaker if voters keep him in.
All right. So Representative LaShawn Ford, he's a Democrat, had 17, as you said, counts charged against him. And it basically got into some tax business yet again and using some of this, basically applying for a loan, using it for other purposes, including that of his first campaign to make his way to the Illinois House. And it turns to have just been gone down to one. Of course, it's very difficult to figure out what all is going on with that, because you prosecutors are not obligated to comply with those Freedom of Information Act requests and share all what their thinking was and what is happening. It is no longer a felony. That group of charges would have gotten LaShawn Ford out of the house. Instead, Ford will be able to remain because he's pleading guilty to a misdemeanor. He says he's sorry and he's learned his lesson. What he ultimately basically admitted to was that for paying a lesser tax, pretty much. And what it gets to here, though, I think there's a lot of questions. Had the feds gone after him originally in hopes of trying to find more or some sort of, you know, connection that he has through Illinois politics? Was this perhaps just a case, as his attorneys had argued, where they were going after him because he was an African-American and a legislator, and that this is a sort of witch hunt for prosecutors to go after elected officials? Or what all was there? We do have there's a lot of unknowns in this case, but LaShawn Ford will be coming back to Springfield. That is the major takeaway.
What's really unusual about this, though, is that, you know, when you think about the batting average that federal prosecutors have when they bring these indictments, it's somewhere north of 90% conviction rates. And in LaShawn Ford's case, I mean, they had thrown, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, 15 or 16 or 17 felony counts against Ford. And it involved, you know, a bank loan from a now defunct bank. Nobody at the bank was, the bank collapsed. Nobody at the bank was implicated in any wrongdoing here. And so it was just it was a strange case to begin with. But it's almost unheard of to have that many felony counts that were brought by the feds in the first place, along with the press release and everything else. I can't remember. There's a press conference associated with this, but. To have that all be basically reduced down to a misdemeanor, it's unheard of. And I just think it's one of those rare cases where the federal government somehow overplayed its hand. And of course, they're not obligated, as Amanda says, to give any explanation, but it's very peculiar.
It's that there's such a thought that goes along with the prosecutors, the U.S. Attorney's Office, that they don't make mistakes. And this may have been a case everybody does, and perhaps this was one. We don't know.
Well, you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't there a change in personnel at the U.S. Attorney's Office in between the time these charges were first leveled and the time when Representative...
Right, and maybe that's part of it. Yes, Charlie. Zachary Farden is now the head of the office.
Yeah,
maybe.
And they took a look at this and they said, well, maybe this isn't a very solid case, and we go to trial and we lose on it, so we'll cut a deal where if you plead for this lesser offense that you misstated on your income tax how much it cost to rehab this house, and therefore you saved almost $4,000 in your tax burden, if you plead guilty to making this false statement on your income tax form, we'll drop everything else.
Maybe he should have just invested in the Cayman Islands instead.
There we go.
And that's all the time we have for this edition of State Week. Thanks to our guest, Dade McKinney of the Chicago Sun-Times. You can get a podcast of this show by going to WUIS.org. Or if using a desktop or laptop, find it on iTunes by searching for State Week in Review. Production assistance for our program today provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Bill Whelan.
You've been listening to State Week in Review, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week in Review is produced in the state capitol by public radio station WUIS. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.